Shall I do it? Shall I start now?
Well, the audio is not the best, but I guess technology won't help us with that today. So, yes.
My name is Magdalena Moskalewicz. I am Andrew W. Mellon Postdoctoral Fellow at the Museum of Modern Art at New York, working at the CMAP project, focusing on Eastern European art in the post-war period.
So, now that we have set the context, let's talk about press. The Polish radio experimental studio to which this focus is dedicated.
So the publication of the Polish radio experimental studio, A Close Look, Theme on Post, is the outcome of a larger research project that's run at the Museum of Modern Art called CMAP, which stands for Contemporary and Modern Art Perspectives. And this project looks at three regions of the world that so far hasn't been exhaustively researched and investigated in the Western, especially English-speaking, art history, and in this particular museum. And this is Latin America, East Asia, and Eastern Europe. And while looking at Eastern Europe, we have specifically here at MoMA started with a network of fluxes. So the network of artists that was run by George Maciunas from New York, but that encompassed numerous artists and theoreticians in many countries, including Eastern European countries. And interestingly, one of the contacts of George Maciunas in Eastern Europe was Józef Patkowski and the Polish Radio Experimental Studio in Poland. This is slightly unusual because most of the contacts of George Maciunas and their collaborators all over the world were artists, as in visual artists, very often conceptual and performance. But the Fluxus as such was also a network of composers and of people engaged critically in investigating music and in experiments with music. And Maciunas met Jan Patkowski, the founder of Experimental Studio, in Darmstadt during one of the new music workshops that were very famous at the time. So when, in 1964, Maciunas was thinking about investigating Eastern Europe more, and two of the Fluxus artists, Erik and Tony Andersen, were setting on a tour to Eastern Europe from Copenhagen that they ultimately took to various countries, to Hungary, to Czechoslovakia, to Poland, to USSR. They started the tour as directed by George Maciunas in Warsaw with Józef Patkowski. So this was our first, at MoMA here, our first point of interest in that circle, because interestingly, it wasn't the visual artists in late 50s and then 60s that George Maciunas and the Fluxus would be in touch with, but this was the composers and the experimental musicians and theoreticians of music, specifically in Warsaw. Set up in Warsaw in 1957 was the first one and the only one operating behind the Iron Curtain, so in the countries of the Soviet bloc at the time. It was also the fifth one set up in Europe after the famous studio in Paris, in Cologne, in Milan, and one that used to run very shortly in Eindhoven in the Netherlands. And it was a very interesting time in Poland then, late 1950s, because it was the time when the enforced domination of socialist realism started to loosen, specifically after the death of Joseph Stalin in 1953. Around 1956, we have a phenomenon that was later called the thaw, a thaw of this very strong political control of the culture, where this control started to loosen a bit in order to open up the cultural scene onto what was happening in the West. So even a few years before, in the early 1950s, such phenomena as electronic music, for that matter abstract painting, would be seen as some bourgeois fancy. But in the late 1950s, it started to be possible to actually open up and bring some of these these phenomena back to Poland in order to strengthen the local scenes. So Józef Patkowski, when he decided to start the studio in 1957, he traveled extensively. He went to Paris, he went to Cologne, he had been to Darmstadt before, so he knew exactly how these places worked and what he wanted to do. And what he wanted to do was, in fact, to provide a space for composers to work, to experiment with electronic music that at the time was a huge novelty that was bringing interest to many circles of composers and theoreticians alike. But also, it has to be said already that the studio had a very utilitarian reason for its existence. It was set up in the Polish radio. Let's remember, this is the time before television. So the Polish radio was really the main state broadcaster of any news and any information, and the main producer of radio plays, of radio operas, right? Because it is before we would have such broadcasts on TV. So the idea was to have the most contemporary, the most edgy equipment available there for composers to work, to produce music specifically for these broadcasts. So the idea from the scratch was of a double manner. It was double folded. One was this musical experiments that, of course, Patkowski and composers of the time were super interested in. But the other, and this is more the political and the structural reason, was to have a very high level studio for production of incidental music for theater, radio theater plays, radio broadcasts, and also documentary movies, which sometimes there would be propaganda movies or just informational films that were produced at the radio at the time.
Lot ku gwieździe nadziei trwał całe lato. Po bezkresnych obszarach wszechświata wędrują barwne kosmiczne latawce. Moje trzecie oko poleciało tam, gdzie znajduje się najciekawsze miejsce naszego układu, zbudowana z krzemowych płytek zbiorowa pamięć kosmosu. Tutaj właśnie otrzymało informacje na temat historii Gwiazdy Nadziei i jej położeniu w kosmosie.
Looking at the Polish Radio Experimental Studio today, it's impossible not to notice how independent it was.
This is a very interesting and a very good point. And there is also a very particular reason for Polish Radio Experimental Studio independence. And this is its structure. It was set up by Józef Patkowski, who wasn't a composer himself. He was a theoretician. And it wasn't just like places, just like the studio in Paris and in Cologne, it wasn't circled around one composer. The studio in Paris, the Groupe de Recherche Musicale, was set up by Pierre Schaeffer, and it very quickly became a studio for Schaeffer and his peers, people around him, to produce their music. The Nordwestdeutsche Rundfunk in Cologne became the studio where Stockhausen worked and where he produced his pieces. The situation in Warsaw, however, was that the only people employed full-time were the sound engineers. So it was the Patkowski, the director, and sound engineers who were, some of them were also theoreticians, and they would lecture on electronic music. This was the case of Krzysztof Szlifirski. Other were technicians and engineers, like Eugeniusz Rudnik. Both these men worked in the studio for many decades. And they were employed there specifically to be able to operate the very sophisticated equipment and to help composers produce their pieces. So the studio was there, available to people from both the Warsaw scene, Polish scene, and from the abroad, with these two guys who were fully proficient in how to use this equipment. It was available there for composers to come in and realize whatever musical and experimental fancy they had. So this is the reason why the studio became somewhat independent and could be focused also on autonomous music, because there would be no one single trend that would take over and that the studio would be dedicated to produce. But it was a huge variety of various composers that would be invited to the studio during the course of its existence by Józef Patkowski and people who worked there.
Basically, this particular structure of press and the high skills of the people working in the studio attracted composers from all over the world.
This was possible due to extreme openness of the studio. It really became a place where people from the outside, from abroad, mainly from the Western countries, were invited. In 1959, so 2 years after the start, Patkowski organized an international workshop called Uses of Radio Techniques in Musical Composition, to which he invited numerous experts from the abroad, including Franco Evangelisti, who was the composer working in Milano, in the studio in Milano, who lectured and gave workshops on the topic, and many of them also recorded. Many people came, used the knowledge of the sound engineers of Szwirski, Rudnik, and later also Mazurek. They recorded their pieces, but then they published these pieces in the West. So interestingly, it would be impossible to compile a complete discography of what was produced at press, because many of these things were physically produced, but they were actually published and distributed by the foreign composers in their respective country, be it Italy, Germany, or France.
What you're saying is that it is impossible to compile a complete record of what have been produced at press.
We're speaking about thousands and thousands of pieces, because these were really not only autonomous compositions produced by composers that were created there, but there were hundreds of pieces for really minor radio broadcasts, some films and documentary movies of, let's say, medium importance. Many miles of tape were used by the sound engineers alone to produce their own compositions. For example, Eugeniusz Rudnik, who was hired as a sound engineer, he, through the practice of working with composers, became composer himself and has been producing multiple pieces that he called miniatures, 1 to 3 minute long compositions on tape that in most cases were never published. Interestingly, some of them were actually just published last year. So there is a renewed interest in this archive now, but it's so vast that it would be really impossible to put it all together in one. For the existence of the studio was really its utilitarian aspect. So the studio was really there to produce music for radio broadcast and to produce music for film. When we speak about the autonomous compositions and about the composers from abroad visiting the studio, this is the part that we remember and we emphasize, but this really was just an element, and I want to say probably like 10% of the time that was used in the studio and the way the studio was actually used. In fact, most often composers would work there on things that were commissioned from them, like a soundtrack for a contemporary movie, or in some cases on projects that they would start in collaboration with filmmakers. There were some more ambitious projects, most often short films. Experimental short films whose music was of more ambitious and sophisticated character. But really, most of the time, it was the sound engineers, really, even without the help of the composers, who would use their pre-recorded sounds and their miles of tape that they had stored in the archives to produce music, soundtrack for movies for children, for documentary movies, for natural life documentaries. So the whole production of the whole film industry at the time was basically supported by what was happening in the studio. Eugeniusz Rudnik, who is one of the sound engineers who worked in the studio from the beginning, recalls this situation very interestingly in the interview that we published with him on post@moma.org, how he very quickly became an expert in producing the sounds for a very popular sci-fi movie. So the sounds that couldn't be recorded from the outside because they needed to sound like they come from the future. And these sounds of the future was what the Polish Radio Experimental Studio became very quickly an expert in.
Something like this.
Interestingly, Polish Radio Musical Studio engaged in the endeavor of publishing some of the scores for some of the compositions that were produced there. And most often these would be the scores, the instructions would be written down afterwards. So after a piece was produced, later, in order to share the idea with a greater circle of composers and to distribute it, the score would be published. But most interestingly and almost paradoxically, the music that was an electronic music, a music written for tape, was published with these scores, together with these scores, on vinyl recordings, because this was the most common way of distributing music at the time. But of course, it couldn't be performed on tape at home. So if somebody wanted to be able to listen to the piece outside of a public performance, the only way for them to listen to such a piece was on a vinyl recording. And that's why these pieces were published on vinyls and released together with a score. So starting with late 50s and through 70s, you would be able to buy a musical composition by, let's say, Andrzej Dobrowolski, that was originally written for a tape, for a music tape and a piano, but it would be released on a vinyl. So he's like a funny paradox about the distribution of the newest technologies.
Thank you.
Communications in 2014 and the sound is still distorted. But not our story, because there is another interesting side to press, which is called the studio space.
The studio was really just one room of circa 300 square meters, 300 square foot or 30 square meters in one of the many long corridors of the headquarters of Polish Radio. So it was just one of the offices. It was referred to by people working there as the black room, because it was most often very dark. And it was very interestingly designed by Oskar Hansen, who was a leading and the most visionary Polish architect at the time. Hansen was approached by Patkowski in 1962, so it's already when the studio is working for 5 years. And he was asked to design the space where the work of the composers could be enhanced and facilitated. Hansen at the time, shortly before, in late 50s, developed the idea of an open form for architecture, which he outlined as an architectural form that would be engaging with the body in the most participatory way. So the space wasn't for him a static thing. It was something that was only triggered in its all dynamism through an existence of an active body. And following the lines of this idea of an open form, he designed a space that would also be changeable by people working in it. Let me give you an example. He designed panels on the walls. So he covered the walls of the studio in panels of double colors. One side was yellow and one side was red. And each side would have different absorbing qualities. So one of the sides would be absorbent for the waves, for the sound wave, and the other would be reflexive, so it would reflect the sound. So the idea was that the space would change according to the needs of the actual composer and sound engineer working on it. The sad end of the story is that many of these enhancements, these architectural enhancements that Oskar produced for the studio, weren't ultimately used by the composers. And since the space was so small, it very often would heat up to the extent it was unbearable to be in. But when the windows were opened, the sound from the outside, the sound from the streets of Warsaw, would interrupt the recordings. So even though it was very thoughtfully designed in architectural terms, just the pure size of it really went across the ideas of open form and the idea of flexibility of a space that could be used for art production. Interestingly, what was supposed to be an execution of an open form became closed to a large extent. Well, the legacy of the studio is hundreds, if not thousands, of compositions, and many of them published either in Poland or abroad. Why so many of these compositions were never released, or we don't even know what they were. This is because it was one of very few opportunities for the foreign composers and artists to come to Poland, to be invited, and for people in Poland, in that scene, in Warsaw, to have connections with what was happening in the West. So in many cases, it was almost, I want to say, almost an excuse to invite somebody to the studio in order to have them lecture in Warsaw, to have them speak at the Warsaw Autumn Festival, another outcome of the Polish thaw of 1956, an extremely important festival of contemporary music that takes place every year in Warsaw, and it still does. So it was really almost an outpost of experimental electronic music in the east of the Iron Curtain that the Experimental Studio of Polish Radio became over the years.
This was Magdalena Moskalewicz from CMAP at MoMA. You can find everything she has been talking about related to press on post at moma.org or just look at the links on radiopapese.org. This interview was produced by Radio Papese, radiopapese.org. Please excuse us for the audio quality. Usually it gets better.